A Betty is a triple threat. She's somebody who is smart and loving and quirky and beautiful on the inside as well as the outside. She's a lifelong learner, all of these wonderful things. And I said, that's it. Like, that's who I am. I aspire to be this Betty, and so do my listeners. So I named the book after my fans and the fans of the podcast, and it's all about, and so the subtitle of the book is A Geeky Goddess's Guide to Intuitive Eating, Balanced Hormones, and Transformative Sex. And in the book, we talk about how to self-actualize. And the premise of the book is that you're already everything that you need. You're already exactly who you need to be. You're already your own dream girl. But it's just a matter of, you know, maybe you've lost yourself along the way, and we're going to give you some tools. We give you many, many tools over the 13 chapters that you can sort of pick and choose to get yourself back to where you want to be on the road to self-actualization.
Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Walker. As a former naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I align the intersection of personal performance, purpose, and innovative thinking in badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. Anthropology is the study and science of what makes an entrepreneur think, feel, and perform in a path compelled by a vision for helping others, solving problems, while building a life on your own terms. Together, we are exploring the health, mindset, and strategies that distinguish the world's best entrepreneurs. This is the Anthropology Podcast. Whoa, Betty, it's episode 208 of the Anthropology Podcast. Today, we are having Dr. Stephanie Estima join us for the third time. I think this has only happened maybe one other time in the history of the Anthropology Podcast, and I am super excited for the things that we are going to get into today. Dr. Stephanie is releasing her new book, The Betty Body, in this moment, today, as we speak. It is being birthed into this world, and we are going to break down the essence of this incredible work that Stephanie has put together. She talks about the Better Body as being the geeky goddess guide to intuitive eating, balanced hormones, and transformative sex. Dr. Stephanie Estima is a chiropractor by background. She is an expert in functional neurology, and she brings this really compelling, compassionate intersection of health and physiology with an application to the world of entrepreneurship, high achievement, and frankly, those women who are ready to set the world ablaze. We discussed intuitive eating. We talked about how to listen to our bodies on a cellular level to feed them what we need so that we can work and contribute in our absolute most divine state. It was an awesome conversation. I have so much time for this woman. I'm super excited to have her back on the podcast. Dr. Stephanie Estima, welcome back to the Anthropology Podcast.
I am just tickled to be here, Megan.
Super stoked. We were just joking. We're like, this is a threpetition. This is your yes. Third time hanging out in the house. And what's so exciting is to see the evolution of you and your career and your contribution and the awesome work that you are putting out into the world. I'm wondering if you can do a recap for everyone, because I think the last time you were here, we were talking about the keto diet. You, I believe, were still in practice or had just stepped out of practice, and your whole world is exploding now. You've got an amazing podcast. You've got an awesome book coming out. Give us the recap on the life of Dr. Stephanie Estima over the last year and a half.
Yeah, so it's been, there's been quite a few changes. So last time I was on this podcast, we were talking about keto. I was in the process at that time, sort of perfecting my, protocols, which are in, the book that I am releasing. So we can certainly get to that today, but, we were talking about keto and how it's not the same for women. And that really was born out of patterns that I both saw in myself and in the patients that I was counseling, doing some nutrition counseling for. So, in April 2019, and I don't recall if that was before or after we spoke. I have to go back and look. But I decided to close down my brick and mortar practice. It was something I've talked to you about this offline. I was talking to you about this offline for, I think, years before I actually did it. But just my frustration. I mean, let me qualify this and say I ran my dream practice. So it was a lot of brain, like a lot of functional neurology, a lot of brain health, a lot of brain metabolism, proxies to help up-level brain health. That's where I love to geek out. I know you love that as well. And it was just this like niggling feeling that just became so loud. I could not continue to ignore it. And it was just that I wanted to be getting this message out to women in a bigger capacity. And the clinic, you know, it was like the easy ticket, right? I had built it up. It was very, you know, steady, predictable income, but I still had this sort of like pounding in the background. It eventually became a pounding and then a scream where I could no longer ignore it for me to close the brick and mortar and then move into the online space to help reach a larger audience around some of my body of work. So since April 2019, I took a little bit of time off after that. I had to grieve a little bit that I was no longer in physical practice. And that was, I'm sure you run into this a lot with doctors who transition because it's part of your identity, right?
And
you
spend, I just wrote that down. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, you go to professional, I mean, first you do like your 4 years in university and then you do your professional degree and then, you know, in my case, I never stopped taking classes. So you've just been always, you know, mastering your craft and your technique and the art of diagnosis. And can I learn another chiropractic technique? And let me learn a little bit about brain health here. And you know, so it was this constant addition to who I was as a doctor. So there was a time afterwards, I'd probably say maybe, you know, 4 or 5 months where I was just grieving. Like I was just taking time off, taking it easy, sleeping in a little bit, crying a lot, trying to figure out what I was going to do. there was a lot of crying. And then I decided towards the end of September in 2019 to start a podcast. This is something I had always wanted to do. It's something I had just put on the back burner because there was no bandwidth for me to do it being in physical practice. So I said, okay, well, let me do one of my dreams. Let's start the podcast and still going strong, absolutely loving it. And then I want to say around the same time, I was like, okay, I'm starting a podcast. And I also know that I need to download, I have a couple of books sort of knocking around like marbles inside my head. So let me download, let me get one of them out. And then that's been, you know, about a year and a half process. And now I'm just ready. I'm ready to birth my book, baby. I'm ready. She's ready to come out.
Well, your book is being birthed today.
Yes.
And you don't exactly sound like a woman in labor as we would traditionally imagine. But what I do know about you is that there is like this bursting energy to get this information into the hands of women. And we've spoken about this many times before, that women are not mini men. Mm-hmm. And that's how we are traditionally treated in this dialogue around keto, this dialogue around intermittent fasting. And it's really frustrating when you try to take that information or you buy those books and you're like, I'm going to do this. And then suddenly you're in a state of, oh my gosh, like what has just happened to my hormones? I thought this was supposed to make me feel better. And this is actually making me feel worse. And so the resources out there for women are not plentiful. And the conversations by men are always like, they're non-inclusive. So I really love where you're going with this piece. So can you give us an overview on what you are referring to when you're talking about the Betty body, which is the name of your book and a huge part of your process? What are we stepping into when we open the pages later today?
So the Betty body, I thought long and hard about the title. So as you know, whenever you write content, there's a birthing process that happens there. And then once the content was finished, I was like, okay, how am I going to sort of wrap this up in a bow? And the easy and most obvious choice was to name it the Betty Body. And I'll give you a little bit of backstory in terms of how that name came to be. So my podcast, as I mentioned, the name of the podcast is called Better. So Better with Dr. Stephanie. It's not about being being perfect. It's just like, what can we do tomorrow, or what can we do today to get better tomorrow? That's sort of the whole through line of the show. And so we started calling the fans of Better our Betties. So the little, you know, this very similar sounding Better Betties. And it really just was very sticky. So women started calling themselves Betties. Like, I'm a Betty. You're the queen bee. You're the queen Betty. And I'm going to be just like you. And I want to be a Betty. And so we would see these reviews come in on the podcast saying, oh my gosh, I'm such a Betty. I'm so happy to be a Betty. And my partner, who you know very well, Giovanni, looked up the definition of Betty in the Urban Dictionary. Now, Urban Dictionary is not PubMed, right? However, you know, it does have some authority, has some street cred. And in the definition, it was honestly my perfect avatar of a woman. It was, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the exact definition in front of me, but it was something like, you know, a Betty is a triple threat. She's somebody who is smart and loving and quirky and beautiful on the inside as well as the outside. She's a lifelong learner, all of these wonderful things. And I said, that's it. Like, that's who I am. I aspire to be this Betty. And so do my listeners. So I named the book after my fans and the fans of the podcast. And it's all about, and so the subtitle of the book is A Geeky Goddess's Guide to Intuitive Eating, Balanced Hormones, and Transformative Sex. And in the book, we talk about how to self-actualize. And the premise of the book is that you're already everything that you need. You're already exactly who you need to be. You're already your own dream girl. But it's just a matter of, you know, maybe you've lost yourself along the way, and we're going to give you some tools. We give you many, many tools over the 13 chapters that you can sort of pick and choose to get yourself back to where you want to be on the road to self-actualization.
I love it. What does this whole process have to do with keto?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I love playing around with different nutritional mediums for affecting change. And I am someone who has played with keto now, have been in and out of keto for many, many years. And I think that it is one of the most powerful tools when it is done correctly, and specifically if you are a female, when you do it in a female, when you are honoring your own biology and your physiology, it can be one of the most powerful tools for up-leveling your brain, your focus, your, you know, a lot of women who tend to follow me are somewhere in the, you know, 40 to 55 year old sort of age range. And one of the big comments that I get is, I'm not sleeping well, I have brain fog, I feel inflamed and I feel hot, I feel like my hormones are a mess. So a ketogenic diet, when it's done properly for a female's body, can be a very effective tool to help rid some of these sources of chronic low-grade inflammation, because that's what brain fog is. It's chronic low-grade inflammation. And even though inflammation is sort of like an umbrella term, it's kind of like pain. Like, what do you mean pain? You know, like, is it sharp? Is it shooting? Is it deep? Is it, you know, there's a lot of different qualifiers for what inflammation is, but using nutrition as a proxy for healing some of these metabolic derangements can be incredibly powerful to help facilitate energy in a woman, to help her lose weight if that's a goal of hers, to help with her brain function, as I mentioned, and to help with her longevity, right? We know that consumption of carbohydrates, especially high consumption of processed carbohydrates, is associated with all-cause mortality, meaning that all sources of, you know, the big ones that we're talking about, the cardiovascular, the cerebrovascular, the stroke, the cancer, the excess carbohydrates is associated with all of these big killers. So when we can begin to approximate and have a carbohydrate appropriate diet, which is through, you know, the process that I talk about in the book, is sort of two phases. The first is there's a nutritional intervention. So we have like a therapeutic time where you are staying in ketosis, But then as a woman, you shouldn't stay there. So that's one of the things that I think really delineate myself from other people in the keto space, where it's like, no, that, you know, a lot of people say, this is how our ancestors ate and you have to be in ketosis all the time. And, you know, that's absolutely not true for a woman. We know that as women, we are much more defensive of our fat stores. We actually need a little bit of extra padding, particularly when we're in our menstrual or our reproductive years, to be able to effectively bring about a menstrual cycle every month or so. So there's different tools and tricks that we go through in the book in terms of cycling in and out of ketosis to still be able to get some of that metabolic adaptability and flexibility. But then we also focus on other things that are really important for women, like lean muscle mass and dense bones and things like that. So we talk about different nutritional or macronutrient compositions, like cycling protein up and down to help facilitate that as well.
You know, as you're talking about this, what just feels so real for me as a clinician, so I'll put that caveat on it, is that to me, this notion of intuitive eating is not, oh, I intuitively want a bag of potato chips, or I intuitively like want to self-indulge, which is where I feel like sometimes we give ourselves permission to go. But I almost feel like what you're talking about is a cellular intuition, that we have this blueprint that is waiting for us to self-actualize upon in terms of the nutrition that we engage in and the way that we engage in. How do you view this connection between, you know, what you just described, keto as a tool, and this overarching term of intuitive eating that you discuss in the book?
Well, I think that I think that a lot of times people will say, oh, I want to, you know, sit down and have a bag of potato chips, and that's really me engaging in self-care. And we don't, when we think, and
when you say that, it sounds so...
It sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, because, it sounds ridiculous.
You know, but our bodies don't want that. Our bodies, you know, I know that you as a naturopathic doctor also hold this premise that, you know, and chiropractors and naturopaths were sort of sisters in this way, that your body has this natural desire to want to achieve homeostasis, balance, and health. And that the more that you can give yourself those tools, the more that your body is going to express health. And, you know, one of the things, and I'll just divert for one moment, you know, when we often think about sitting on the couch at the end of the day, that's how we relax. Well, that's actually not very relaxing for the body, because what you're doing is just sitting in a state of flexion, which is very likely what you've done all day long. You've likely been at your desk, or you've driven to work, or you've gotten the kids, or you've been sitting a lot. What your body craves is low grade movement in extension. So that might be a walk. That might be, you know, maybe doing some light weights where you're working your back, or you're doing any variety of light movement. That's actually how we hack into our parasympathetic nervous system, which is to say, when you're engaging in self-care, you know, we do these things that are going to activate centers in our brain, like the motor cortex, which is in the front part of our brain, that is going to now inhibit some of the lower brain centers that are involved in our sympathetics and our stress response. So I deviate there because I think that what we define as intuitive, like you were saying, like, you know, to sit and have, you know, some cookies or chips or crackers. I think when you begin to attune to the language of your body, you know, whether that is through symptoms and accepting those symptoms for what they are, but then having a lens to try and ameliorate them, or it's knowing that you are worthy, that your body and your cells are worthy of nourishing food. I think that that's when we move into what truly is intuitive eating. And that is to say, learning to appropriately respond to your body in a way that your cells require of you and they expect of you. Your body does not expect you to eat potato chips. And I know that that might sound harsh, and I hope that this is not, you know, coming across as tough love, but your body wants to be healthy. And you know that chips are not, I mean, sometimes it's warranted. Listen, like, I'm homeschooling my kids right now. Like, tonight we're ordering pizza. I'm tired of cooking. Like, you know, there is, like, every Friday night we have a little, like, we loosen up the belt. You know, we have the pizza, which is what we're ordering, you know, tonight. But for the most part, it's that 80-20 rule, right? It's what you are doing most of the time that is going to render the biggest results. So do you have to be perfect all the time? Absolutely not. I completely reject the idea of perfection anyway. I think it's a patriarchal, sexist construct. But I think that as long as you are committing to progress, you are committing to the idea that you are worthy of eating well, then you will begin to make smaller, minute changes in your eating patterns that over the long term amalgamate into these momentous, very large changes in your metabolism, in your body composition, in your energy, in your mood, in all the things that most people are concerned about.
100%. Intuition, it whispers. It doesn't roar. And what I find so awesome about any of these pieces, once we start to input positive functions of health into the body, it will speak to you differently. And that's when your body is starting to speak to you on that intuitive level. And if we take that a step further, I know one of the areas where you have a particular expertise, and I'm assuming you jump into in the book, is this idea of engaging in other rituals of daily living, eating, training, supplementing, all of these pieces, taking those elements and aligning those to our menstrual cycles, putting them into a state of flux that is in alignment with where our body is naturally and hormonally. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, absolutely. And this is the crux of the book, truly, is this idea that women who, a woman of any age, truly, but we sort of divide the group based on age. So women who are in their reproductive years, we have a definitive cycle that is around a month long. So anywhere from, 26 days to 32 days, somewhere in there. And then we also have a population that we talk about, which is late perimenopause and then into menopause, where you don't necessarily have a cycle, a reproductive cycle anymore, but you are still, there's still a cadence and you are still a cyclic, a cyclical being. So for my women who are in their reproductive years, I think one of the things that we have to learn as women is, as you said, we're not mini men. And most of, when you look at society, most of the rituals and the rhythms and the cadence of society really does move in a male-based circadian rhythm. So for example, when we look at corporate culture, it's very, people are rewarded for going into the office really early before anyone is there, working for hours on end. And then in the afternoon, they take a few meetings. And then in the evening, it's drinks with everybody. And that's actually very much attuned with a male's circadian biology or his rhythm of testosterone. Testosterone's very, very high in the morning for men. And then it begins to wane. It starts to decrease in its concentration over the course of the day, such that towards the end of the day, when he's talking more and he's socializing with drinks in the evening, he's more estrogen-like. So he's more talkative. So once you start to realize that our society is very much based for what are more male constructs, we can begin then to say, okay, so how do I fit into this picture? What are my rhythms and rituals? And what's my cadence? And what does my cycle look like? And for women, we go through our entire hormonal milieu over the course of about a month, whereas men will cycle through it daily, right? So once we, even just that piece, if that's the only thing that you take away from this conversation, you're already ahead, you're already miles ahead of other women who are trying to fit into this patriarchal, more male-based system. And I will just say as well, I love men. Okay. So I always want to pre-frame this. I love men. There's nothing, I love my man. I have two sons, so I love men. But what I think has been lost is this beautiful hormonal, this ever-changing ebb and flow of the female hormonal landscape has been lost, and women are not aware of why they feel different at certain times of the month, and they try to put their head down and punch through it. And this is where we run into problems. So in the book, I basically go through how to set up a morning routine, which is you know, and potentially a little bit of, you know, controversial. It's a little controversial in that I start off the chapter by saying, I think most morning routines are sexist. You know, it's like there's all these morning routines where men get up at some ungodly hour. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning or something. And they're journaling for an hour. And then they have this beautiful tea ceremony that they have. And then they work out for an hour.
And then
they take a cold shower. And then it's like, okay, where are the kids? Like, you know, as a woman, we are often the primary caregivers. And if that man has children, it's very likely that his wife or potentially help is raising those kids. And if that's something that he can afford or that's afforded to him, like, bless you, right? Like, all the more power to you. But as a woman, I don't want a woman who is now the primary caregiver of her children to be like, why can't I wake up at 4 a.m? First, women have longer sleep cycles, so you shouldn't be waking up that early. But also, sometimes when my kids were young, and I don't know if this is true for you, Doc, or not, but my morning routine was sometimes like my kids coming into my bedroom and waking me up. Like, that was my morning routine, you know?
There was no potential for a morning routine for a very long time.
Yeah.
And once I let go of it, it was this massive relief. I was like, okay, I'll start it once Raylan sleeps through the night. And then I'll start it once Bayla sleeps through the night. I've been at this for 10 years now. And, right. You know, now we're at a point where 80% of the time they'll sleep through the night. And those 20%, there is no morning routine that happens. And that is the permission I've given myself. I was like, sleep is the number one priority.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When it gets disrupted. And so I go to plan H of the morning routine based on what happened the night before.
Yes. And that flexibility of thinking is so healthy, because what women typically do is they say, well, there must be something wrong with me. Like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do this morning routine that, you know, whoever is touting? And if you actually look in the morning routine genre, it tends to be men. It tends to be males who are saying, you know, wake up 2 hours early or 3 hours early before everyone wakes up. And for men, that's really great, right? It's really great for their energy, for their growth hormone, testosterone levels. It's supporting that. But for women, we can't, I mean, it's just an impossibility. So I love this idea of flexibility in your morning routine. So as you just mentioned, sometimes I have a 5-minute morning routine. Like, sometimes I'm just dancing to a song. And other times the kids, you know, and I go downstairs, I have a little home gym that I work out of, and we'll do, you know, they'll jump on the trampoline for a little bit and I'll try to punch out some weights. And other times it's nothing at all. Right. So I think that getting rid of some of the shame and guilt that we have as women that we carry because we can't act exactly like men or the things that men can do, I think is really important. So we talk about morning routines and evening routines. That's a really, that's another really big one. I find that women, you know, there's sort of this inverse relationship. I haven't studied it. It's just a clinical observation that women will report to me. So there's, as the sun goes down, we have an increase in anxiety. It's just this, you know, less sun, more anxiety. And women are worrying about what happened that day, what's coming up tomorrow, how they failed as a mom, how they didn't do all these things right. And so we talk a lot about how to, whether it's 5 minutes or, you know, you have 30 minutes to create and cultivate an evening routine that works for you. In that, of course, we talk about journaling and gratitude journaling, which is very important for, you know, I call it flexing your frontal lobe, right? So getting your brain really strong to be able to inhibit those lower brain centers that are causing some of that angst. We talk about sex, we talk about orgasms, because for women, I mean, maybe this is an entirely different podcast altogether, but, you know,
let's just keep going.
Yeah. But for women, it's like, you got to have as many as you can get, right? So it's either, you know, and I'm talking about orgasms specifically. So either it's with a partner or you get a toy, you call it your partner and you get after it, right? Because that is going to one of the best ways to improve your lifespan, your health span, your vitals is to be orgasming on the regular. So we talk about, you know, rituals around that. And we talk about the difference between, you know, a mechanical orgasm. So if you're using toys versus you know, a manual one. And we talk about the differences in terms of the effects that it has on some of the different phases of your orgasm. So super interesting stuff there. And then of course we talk about training too. So training and supplementation, as you mentioned, very, very important for women who are in their reproductive years to understand where they are in their cycle and then how they can nuance their resistance training and their cardio to adapt to that, because there are times in the month where you absolutely should not be doing high intensity interval training. You're setting yourself up for injury. And there are other times where you should be lifting really heavy. There's other times that you need to be, you know, maybe engaging in a recovery, like a recovery couple of days, like 3-4 days where you are just doing light active rest. And this is going to allow you to put on lean muscle mass, to maintain bone density, which is super important as we are preparing to move into menopause in that lower estrogen environment. Estrogen is one of the potent stimulators of our bones. So if we now don't have the chemical stimulus from estrogen, we need to be able to replace that with a mechanical one. So we talk about how, which is, and when I say mechanical, I mean resistance training or calisthenics or body weight exercises. So we talk about how to nuance your different training protocols based on where you are in your cycle as well.
I'm super excited to start to delve into those pieces. And I just want to go back to orgasms for one second.
Oh, yes, I know. I kind of jumped, but yeah, let's pause.
It's okay. It's all right. We're going to do it. It's funny because one of the very first times where I noticed getting frustrated by the conversation and I felt notably excluded from it as a woman was listening to Tim Ferriss's podcast. And he was saying, you know, one of the best things he ever did for his business was he abstained from orgasms and masturbation and sex in general for a month because it was so distracting. And it was like every piece of my physiology stopped and was like, whoa. This is very dangerous advice to be given if you're just going to blanketly exclude 50% of the population from that.
Correct.
That's just not how the female body works. And it was the very first time I remember being on the subway and I stopped. It was like stopped in my tracks. And I was like, all right, enough mm-hmm. of this like mansplaining the intersection of entrepreneurship and health to all of these individuals who are so eager to figure out how to optimize their health, and you're really doing a huge disservice to women. So I really love that we're talking about it in the context of really empowering and fully leveraging what your attuned female body has to offer you and your potential.
Right.
And orgasms need to be part of that conversation.
100%. And you know, Tim has never been a woman, as far as I'm aware. So he can't necessarily understand what it's like to be female. But if you want to age yourself, if you want to have terrible periods and you want to always be in sympathetic dominance, then you should follow that advice.
You too can be like Tim Ferriss.
You too. Exactly.
I'm never going to be invited on his podcast.
No, now I'm probably never going to be invited now either. But I mean, I no fault of him. He's not a woman, right? And this is kind of what you were talking about at the top of the hour. Women have often been excluded from the conversation by the very fact that we have a menstrual cycle, even from literature, because that in and of itself has been considered a confounding variable. So what you end up with is this me search, right? This research that is all about men, for men, by men. And I don't think it's malicious in its intent. I just think that it's just easy. It's like, let me just take out every single possible variable, including the natural cyclical rhythms of a woman, so that I can control for this one one variable that they're manipulating in the RCT or whatever they're doing. So,
and I've maybe shared this with you before, but I have had patients. So my office, I mean, you were right downtown too. I was like in the core, in the shadows of these corporate buildings. Mm-hmm. And the first time this happened to me, I did everything I could to just like hold it together. And then when it started to happen more and more in conversation, I went, oh my gosh, this is epidemic. But I would have women who come in and we would talk about, you know, are you on any medication? And naturally, if women are on the birth control pill, they don't consider this medication. And just for all of you out there, you need to.
This is the medication. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So step one, please acknowledge that on your intake forms with your medical providers. It's a medication. The second thing was, the very first time that it happened, this woman said to me, oh, I take the birth control pill and I take it continuously. And I said, oh, you know, do you have a history of endometriosis or like what is the purpose of that level of intervention? And she said, oh, I've realized that it is a massive disadvantage to me in a corporate setting to menstruate and have any type of cyclicity with respect to my emotions. And so if I'm going to survive in a man's world, I'm going to survive in a man's body. And I'm crying for her now.
So as a clinician,
I was like, hold your shit together, Megan. But as a woman, I was like, oh, okay. And we had rapport and we worked through that with her. And it wasn't the only time that I've had that conversation with women. And this is why I think your work is so powerful, because we are sitting on this gold mine of capacity. We've just never had conversations that have enabled us to unlock it. And you've created this roadmap for us to be able to really unlock this inner goddess and this powerful individual. And it's not a curse. I mean, we have such horrific language around women's menstrual cycles. It's this massive advantage, but it's like having a really strong horse. You have to know how to manage it.
Exactly. This is, you know, it's like having a Lamborghini, but being a six-year-old and having no idea how to drive it, right? You have to really step into that power. And I'll give you an example. I mean, that is such a sad story. But again, back to what we were talking about, this is very much when we think about some of the things that are, acclaimed in society, they are very, male in the, I'll say male energy. So that doesn't necessarily mean men only, but things like success, things like the house, the degree, the money, the accolades, all of the things, the pursuits, the chase and the hunt, right? These are all usually very, applauded and accepted and celebrated in the society that we live in. So it's no wonder, I don't fault that patient of yours for coming to that conclusion, because in many ways, I don't think that she has a complete picture, but in many ways, that would be a logical deduction based on what she has seen in society. But I wanted to, just speak to some of the power that you have while understanding the hormonal milieu that you marinate in. And one of them that most women tend to, discard, or they tend to laugh at, is the couple of days before your bleed. So when we are thinking about, this is in context, this is about week four of your period. We are about the middle of week four, where your progesterone levels drop. There's no fertilized egg. So progesterone drops. The corpus luteum now is starting to degenerate. And now the endometrial lining is becoming what we call ischemic. So there's no oxygen there and the lining is beginning to die. And estrogen is also dropping during this time too. During that time, this is when we will often see for women, if they are inflamed, we will see more of an amplification of some of those, PMS type of syndromes. So like the sleep disturbances, the moodiness, the irritation, the bloating, that sort of thing. But what also, when we think about this from a mental perspective, there's something called a negativity bias. So everything is wrong, right? Husband can't do anything right. Kids are, my career is wrong. My nail polish, like I didn't even pick the right nail polish this week, right? Like that's how we are sort of in our heads. But that is an incredibly useful tool. So by being in that low progesterone or that sudden drop in progesterone and estrogen, we are now able to, through the lens of this negativity bias that we have in those last couple of days right before we begin menstruating, is to evaluate our life and understand what things are working and what things are not. Now, I can't remember where I originally heard this, but for men, sometimes when they're trying to make a decision about something, they'll say, I'm going to go think on it. Like, I'm going to go think about it. For women, we need to listen to that negativity bias. What is our body telling us about what is not working? And then we need to bleed on it. So we need to take the time during our actual menstrual, like while we are bleeding, shedding that endometrial lining, and figure out what the solution is. So if you are thinking, oh, well, I have to be a man. My body has to mimic that of male physiology. You are missing out on critical thinking, your ability to evaluate your environment, and the ability now to think about solutions that can potentially ameliorate it as well.
I totally love that. And it is a time of complete clarity. And I love this idea of you get what you tolerate, and you have this incredible moment every single month, in some cases every 6 weeks. We can talk about hormonal regularity, but where you can just scratch the things that you no longer want to tolerate. There's so many incredible reframes that we can start to put onto this piece.
Absolutely. Yes.
When does the wisdom stop coming? I love this, Dr. Stephanie. Can you give everybody three critical things that they can deploy immediately in their life that is going to start them on this path of heightening their intuition with self and caring for their bodies in a whole new way?
Sure. I think that the very first thing that you can do that's super easy is just download some sort of fertility app and start tracking your cycle if you're not already. And I did not do this for years. Like, full disclosure, I had no idea when my period was coming and going, had no idea how long it was. So I think one of the best things that you can begin to do is just start amalgamating data. So I use Clue. It's no affiliation. It's C-L-U-E. And you just like enter in, you know, how you're feeling that day, what's your skin look like, what's your bowel movements look like, you know, that kind of thing. And then over time, you're going to accrue data about your ebbs and flows. Because as much as, you know, you and I, Megan, we have the same parts, but we work, you know, differently because we have a different genetic makeup, different epigenetics that those genes marinate in. So we want to be understanding our own individual cycle so that then we can begin to become empowered to ask better questions. And when you ask better questions, because you have more data, then you get better answers and you are more empowered to make better decisions around your health. So first thing would be to start tracking your cycle. If I may be so bold to suggest that you pick up my book, I think that you will find it.
Be bold.
It is my book, baby. I'm so proud of it. And I hope that it's going to be, at least in some way, give you one tool that you can derive from it, whether it's you know, cycling plans for cycling your body in and out of ketosis, where it's going full in ketosis, where it's workouts, where it's supplementation rhythms. That would be, you know, my second suggestion. And then the third suggestion would just be to take the opportunity to be gentle with yourself. I think as women, we especially type A personalities, of which I am a former recovering type A personality, it's still a daily struggle. But whenever we decide to do something, we want it right now. I'm going to work out. So I'll work out for a week. So where's my biceps? I don't see them yet. You know, so we have this very short time that we give ourselves. So I would love if, in conjunction with the book and the cycle tracking that you're going to be doing, that you just make it easy. Like, you just decide that I'm not going to have these punitive thoughts that are going to beat myself up if I'm not getting the results that I want in a week or 2 weeks or a month or 2 months. You know, as a clinician, as you are, Megan, and what my clinical experience tells me is that when someone does have some sort of hormonal derangement, it takes some time to undo that. You know, you need to be able to give yourself a long runway, a lot of grace and a lot of love and a lot of forgiveness in order to continue to tread along that path. So I would just love if women stop being so hard on themselves and to stop with the punitive thoughts, because it is just, you know, when we think about, you know, what can be damaging in terms of your metabolism, you know, you have a piece of cake and okay, so maybe your insulin spikes and, you know, there's this sort of 2 hour time where your insulin levels are much higher, but then it's kind of done, right? But if you are constantly beating yourself up about things, that is day and night, all day, every day. That is going to bring you into that sympathetic dominance that we touched on before. And you're just going to be a stress case. So I would just love it if women were like, okay, I'm going to do all these things, but I'm just going to make it easy and trust that my body knows what to do.
I love that you say that. Our mutual friend, Dr. Joan Rosenberg, talks about this, your self-talk,
yes,
as one of the most critical pieces in terms of self-worth and self-love. But she's like, it is negative self-talk is the most dangerous thing you can engage in on a psychic level. And I love that you speak to that, because anything that becomes psychological becomes physiological. And ultimately, we are the gatekeepers to our own lives and our own feelings and our own physiological capacity. So these are super awesome, as are you. And it's a perfect place in the interview to transition to something I call our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe that we have them in how we live our lives as well. So I've got a few quick questions for you.
Love it.
First one, besides the Betty Body, which everyone is going to get their hands on today, what is your most recommended book? The one that you're just dying to share with everyone?
Oh, that's a really good question. So right now I'm reading this fast. It's a little bit old, but I love it. It's called Breath by James Nestor. Have you heard
Someone else mentioned this to me.
Oh my,
I haven't read it.
It is life-changing. Okay, so let me just tell you a little bit about the book, and then you also have to get this book too. So it talks about nose breathing versus mouth breathing, and how we have as a society gone to more mouth breathing, and how that has distorted our jaws, our microbiome, the, you know, our digestive system, our brains, sinuses, all the things. So I tape my kids' mouths shut at overnight now, because I'm trying to get them to develop the strength in their nasal passages to breathe through their nose. So that is probably the book that I am most enjoying right now. It's like a super fun, very geeky, and it's sort of like an anthropological look as well at how once we started eating, you know, cooked food, once we learned about fire and all that, our ancestors were able to consume more calories, leading to the bigger brain, and evolutionarily our larynx dropped into our throat. So bigger brain means less area for the sinus cavities. And yeah, it's probably my favorite book right now.
Okay. Amazing. I'm on it. What's your favorite health hack?
My favorite health hack, I would say that it is probably the most simplest of hacks, but it is, you know, it's my philosophy that health doesn't really need to be hard. So I will counsel anyone if weight loss is a goal for them, or they're just trying to be more mindful and develop that intuitive muscle, to put their fork down in between bites. And I know that's super, people are probably like, okay, whatever. But I promise you, you're giving yourself the space to fully chew your food, first of all, which is really important for the amylase and the digestive capacity of your body. But you're also giving your hunger signals, some of these metabolic signals, to signal whether or not you are full when you are eating slower, instead of just barreling everything into your mouth in 5 minutes or less. So putting the fork down in between bites is probably my favorite health hack of all time.
Yeah. And I'll just put context here that when I talk about hacking or biohacking or health hacking in general, it's not because I'm like, what's the quick win? What's the pill I can take so they don't have to do the hard work? But to me, the idea of a hack is, what is a small action that you can take that actually will have a monumental difference in terms of your health? So I love that. It's perfectly on point. How would you define your purpose?
Oh, this is a really good one. My purpose, I think, I feel, and I know that my purpose is to speak to women in a way that they probably haven't been spoken to before, and to help facilitate what I think is just very overdue, which is healing our feminine. And we talked a little bit about masculine energy before, and this is not gender specific, right? So this is like masculine energy and our feminine energy. And I think that for most of us, male, female, and everything in between, I think that we have really divorced ourselves from, suppressed, and ignored the intuition, the surrender, the slowing down, and the softness that our feminine energy can provide. So it is not only a personal goal of mine to continue to heal that wounded feminine in my own, you know, heart and soul, but to also teach other women and anybody else who wants to come along for the ride how to do it as well.
Beautiful. Last question for you. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Can I do a half-see? Can I do a bit like nature and nurture?
You're an entrepreneur. You can do whatever the heck you want.
All right. So I think that there are some genetics that make us more prone to being entrepreneurs. I don't know if we've talked about this offline, but I feel like Compt is one of them. And I feel like there is an entrepreneurial gene. I just don't know. There's a couple of them when I look at like dopamine processing and like Compt is one of them where people who are after the quit, like they're like hunters or huntresses, right? They're after the kill. I think that that is an essential component to being an entrepreneur because, and I do this too. Like I get a big win. And then I'm like, okay, great. Yeah. What's the next thing now? Like I don't stop to marinate in it to be like, wow, I did so great. This is such a, can we celebrate? I'm like, great. What's next? Right. So I think that there's a genetic component to it. And then I also think that there's an environmental component to it as well. I think that many entrepreneurs, at least ones that I've spoken to, so this could completely be, you know, my end could be totally biased here, but the entrepreneurs that I speak to, when we get into some meaningful conversations, there's often some sort of trauma that they are, you know, whether it's, you know, has affected their, you know, their feelings of self-worth or, you know, their capacity. So there's an element of like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to build this thing and I'm going to show whoever, you know, that I am worthy, that I am smart, that I am capable, that I am lovable, that I am, you know, all these things. So I think that there's nature and there's nurture. And that's not to say that all entrepreneurs are just walking wounded psychopaths. Like, that's not what I mean. I mean that we're all trying to, whether it's to ourselves or to whoever, I think that there's a big driver. And whenever you look at high performers and you find a lot of this in the entrepreneurial community, I have come to understand, and it is my opinion, however controversial, that most high performers, including myself, it is a trauma response. It is a response where we have been hurt as children. We have felt unsafe. We have felt unheard. And it is our coping mechanism that drives that forward.
I feel the making of episode number 4 with Dr. Stephanie Estima. Your book, The Betty Body, hits shelves and the internet today. You're up to so many incredible things. Where can we send people to get their hands on your book and follow up on your work?
Oh, I love this. So if you are interested in learning about the book, you can go to bettybodybook.com. Say that 5 times fast. It's super fun. bettybodybook.com. And you can find it on Amazon, of course, as well. And we have a membership, a monthly membership for our Bettys. We call it Hello Betty, and it's a monthly membership where we talk about all the things we've been talking about today. We talk about fuel, we talk about fitness, we talk about the divine feminine, we talk about the female psyche and the healing of it. And it's just a community of women we are just collectively, you know, it's in a circle. We're all level pegging and we're all just trying to heal and be the best versions of ourselves. So you can go to hellobetty.club.
I love it. Well, congratulations on the book and thank you again for hanging out with me today.
Thank you so much, Megan. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome, right? Dr. Stephanie brings it to the table every single time she has the opportunity to talk about these things. She is so passionate about how women can take control of their health and how we have this incredible operating system that we are all just really only on the brink of understanding how to utilize. Get your hands on her book, Change Your Life. I promise it's going to provide you with an entirely new perspective. Now, speaking of new perspectives for our practitioners in the crowd, I want to give you one last opportunity to join me in a free training that I am delivering on both the 18th and the 21st of February. And that is called the CEO Systems Master Class. And in this masterclass, I'm going to be talking about the exact systems that I use to build a six-figure practice and have a lifestyle that I actually loved and enjoyed, meaning I wasn't hustling all the time. I was doing those activities that I wanted to do. I will teach you how and when to be able to delegate and move things off your plate that are no longer serving you or your business, to move you out of that hustle phase, to create a transformational approach to care, and to design a marketing system that is not throwing spaghetti at the wall, but is providing you with predictable, repeatable people to help in your practice over and over again. There's some key things that we as practitioners tend to overlook when it comes to building our businesses in a scalable way, and we're breaking it all down in the CEO Systems Masterclass on the 18th and 21st of February. These are totally live. They're scheduled for an hour. They will go longer because inevitably we're going to do live seat coaching. It's going to be super awesome. If you want to join us for that, you can head on over to my Instagram, which is Dr. Megan Walker. In the link at the top, you're going to be able to register for those masterclasses. And when they happen live, I cannot guarantee a replay. So if you're looking to move out of that state of frenetic busyness as a practitioner and to practice your system of medicine the way you wish your patients would live, I'm going to really encourage you to join me on that live training on the 18th and the 21st. Next week, I am joined by Danny Kagan. We are breaking down leadership. What does it mean to be a leader? Why there's an unprecedented and unique opportunity for us to fill this void as entrepreneurs. And we get into how to design a lifestyle and a living in a manner that is both outside the box, but congruent with your ideal state of being. It's an awesome episode. I'm super excited to bring it to you. That's coming to you live next Tuesday on the Entrepology Podcast. We'll see you then.